They compete hard on the field and play to win.
But in real life, they have a greater purpose.
It's more than a game.
Welcome to Faith on the Field with Rob Motti, Doug Horton, and Pastor Phil Mosher on 610 Sports ESPN Radio.
And welcome to Faith on the Field show presented by Eastern University. I am Rob Motti with Doug Horton and Pastor Phil Mosher on 610 Sports ESPN Radio. Joining us in studio is Phillies team chaplain, Pastor Robert Pinckney, and he'll be with us for the cross-training segment a little bit later on in the show. And tonight our guest will be three-time All-Star Curtis Granderson of the New York Mets. Curtis also played for the Tigers. He played for the Yankees. I know as a lifelong Phillies fan, Doug, you kind of have some reservations about having a Met on.
Yeah, it's a struggle.
But you heard his interview, right? It's amazing.
So I'll still call him a Tiger. I think that would be better than a Yankee or a Met.
More than a Yankee, more than a Met, right?
But I do have some friends that are Mets fans, so one for them.
That's good. So Granderson, though, is having a really tough year right now. He's four homers away from 300 for his career, but he's batting 159, and he's been benched a few times recently as he struggles.
I mean, he was a phenomenal fantasy player years ago, five-tool player.
40 homers, 20 steal kind of guy. And you know, he developed into, when he first came up with the Tigers, he wasn't a 30-40 homer guy. He was a leadoff hitter, and the Mets still used him as a leadoff hitter. Even now, sometimes they use him as a leadoff hitter. But he's someone who, no matter whether he hits a home run or he strikes out guys, whether he goes 4-for-4 or whether he goes 0-for-4, he's always the same guy on and off the field. He's calm. He's pleasant. And he's one of the nicest guys, really, in sports. And last year, he won the Roberto Clemente Award, which is given to the player who best exemplifies the game of baseball, sportsmanship, community involvement. And we talk a little bit about his community involvement and the individual's contribution to his team. And that's voted on by baseball fans and media guys. So the one thing with him, you need to fix that. The one thing with Curtis Granderson is you never see him throwing equipment in frustration. You never see Curtis dropping F-bombs or whatever it is after a strikeout or grounding into a double play or doing anything. Baseball's a game of failure. If you fail 70% of the time in baseball, you're a Hall of Famer because that means you hit 300. So baseball's a game of failure, and you have to be able to accept that. And he's one of those guys who takes being a role model for young kids especially very seriously. So what we're going to do this show is have a lot of fun, because this is a topic that I wanted to get into for a while. I know Doug has been wanting to talk about it. It relates to both of us as still hanging on as athletes in our
hanging on in our forties.
Yeah, you know, we'll see what we're doing.
Well, you know, you last a lot longer if you pace yourself.
Yeah, well, that's what I do.
I know.
It's exactly what I do. You don't have to run every ball out, but we'll get into that. We'll get into that for sure. But the thing is, being a Christian on and off the field. And being a Christian sometimes when you're playing sports, it's real difficult when you're in a heat of the moment and your competitive juices are flowing and you have to try to walk your talk, but you just want to win. You want to do so well. And for me, I'm a competitive guy. Doug, you're a pretty competitive guy. I've seen you play.
A little bit.
Yeah, you flied out to me twice last week, and I said, don't hit the ball to me, and you didn't
I
even want to.
I gave you two can of corns.
Yeah, you didn't even want to hear it. You got to hit the ball somewhere else. You can't hit it.
If I'm
playing in the outfield, just hit it somewhere else. So you can't do that. But the thing that I struggled with when I transitioned from baseball to playing softball was the fear, and it happened right after I tore my ACL, and I said, you know what, I'm now about mid 30. I'm gonna go to softball. I felt like as a softball player, when you are a former baseball player, every time up, you should hit a line drive. You got to hit a seed. You got to hit a line drive over an outfielder's head.
It's a different swing, though. It's a completely different swing. We found that when we played some younger teams, if you throw the ball a little higher, it's different coming in on that plane, especially high pitch, as opposed to
a
straight fastball.
Especially if it's unlimited arc. Have you ever played unlimited arc? I hate that.
Only in prison.
Yeah, unlimited arc is terrible. Modified is great because it's really close to baseball because they're coming in.
But it's actually rising up on
Yeah, so I like that. But when I first made that transition, I was what I called Wild Man Rob. I was a bat tosser, a water bottle thrower. I drop every F-bomb or whatever it is. You know, I expected to hit a home run every at bat. And you know what? I still do, except now the response and the reaction is different than back then. But what I want to do is I want to talk about one of what I call one of my most embarrassing moments as an athlete. And it was a game 7 years ago, June 2010. And I was back then, it was probably my first or second, maybe second or third year playing softball. I was the shortstop on a team. I was the three or four hitter on a team. And we were on our way to go into the finals that year. But this particular game, the night before, I had partied in New York till about 4 or 5 a.m. And I remember driving home, and I'm driving home, and the sun's coming out, and the birds are chirping, and I'm not going to get much sleep, and I got to get about 3 hours sleep, then I got to go right to the field. You guys know I need my 8 or 9 hours. Only got 6, so I'm going to be a little grouchy tonight. So I'm not that happy. But that particular day, we go to the field, and it was early in the game. I come up to bat, and it's bases loaded, less than 2 outs. So whenever you got a man on third, less than 2 outs, I call it a free swing because, you know, you hit the ball high in the air, and if they catch it somewhere, at least it's a sack fly.
You guys couldn't do that against us the other night, though.
So, yeah, sometimes you score 2 runs, a guy will tag from second and come
all the way
around.
Didn't you guys have bases loaded with no outs?
Nobody out.
And it was
somehow,
a tie game.
I think 3 guys hit ground balls right to short or right to the pitcher or something like that. And it was bad. And one of the easiest one was when I was on third and the guy hit it. There was no way I was scoring. I walked into the dugout. So this time I come up to bat and it's bases loaded. And I rip a hard liner and the third baseman jumps up and makes a great play. And, you know, everybody's like, oh, nice swing. You know, great swing, whatever. I throw the bat. I walk over to the bench and I throw a water bottle into the street. I think the bat hit the fence and broke. I'm not sure. And then I tossed the water cooler and I almost hit the coach's girlfriend with the water cooler.
You know, I can hear Ryan through the glass laughing at you right now.
So, and I am looking where I'm going to find that on YouTube, Rob.
So for whatever reason, that particular day, you know, usually you don't get that many fans coming out to these games. There's a lot of fans at the game. There's a lot of women there. There's young kids. There's girls out there. And like, all I cared about was every time up, I got to hit a ball over the left fielder's head. And back then I could run a little faster, so it would be an easy home run. So I look back at that moment as probably the most embarrassing of my athletic career, because there were people who knew me then who don't know me now. And they don't see the guy I am now. They just think of that person playing on the field, taking it that seriously, and being that aggressive, being that wild. I mean, really, you were just wild and crazy. So
were you that same way? I know you played
a
high
lot.
School, college.
No, See, that was different. In high school, I played baseball. College, played baseball. I wasn't that way because you expect to have failure. It's baseball. But when I went from baseball to softball, I'm like, you should never make an out. You should hit a home run every time up. Like, even to this day right now, when I see if we're playing against young kids who are in their 20s, I'm like, first of all, you have no right playing softball. Because if you're playing softball in your 20s, you ought to be playing baseball somewhere, or you just really stink that bad that you can't play, you know, you can't play baseball, and you ought to be tearing it up in this league. And if you don't do well.
Calm down, Rob.
You
calm
know,
down. Calm down.
You know, if you don't do
you're not going to make it. You're not going to make it. So, calm down.
Those young guys that we play that are in their 20s, they just don't even start talking trash or whatever. You're supposed to have success. There was a time I hit a fly ball through the bat, yelled a word out, carries over the fence for a home run. But I'm irritated because it wasn't a nice enough swing. It didn't go far enough. So that was the kind of player that I was. And gradually...
Did you have other guys on your team?
Not that bad. There was nobody that bad.
Did anybody ever tell you to cool off?
Never, because I was a really good player.
Because if you threw a bat,
nobody cared.
Let's say you hit me in the leg.
Nobody cared. Well, that I never hit anybody in the on-deck circle. I've almost been hit in the on-deck circle, but I...
Nobody with a water cooler?
Yeah, no, I've never done that, except the one time the coach's girlfriend, almost. So...
I don't know if we could play on the same team, Rob.
Well, we do play on the same team. We go, and that's the drastic difference going into prison, because you have to control yourself a whole lot more. So
that's really interesting, Rob, because that would tell you that anger to some degree can be controlled, can it?
Oh yeah.
So we can certainly control it under certain circumstances, but
when you know people are watching.
Absolutely. But you know what? That's a much more hostile situation. Like, if you think Philadelphia fans are tough, like when you have hundreds of inmates lining the third baseline and you're standing on third base. And you bobble a ball, they are all over you. Remember that game?
There's no trash talk like prison trash talk.
When I was pitching?
Oh, when he pitched a game, and they were relentless on you. And then me and Chiz decided to go out and give out the Gospels to the guys where the security guard said to us, don't do it, don't do it. And we're like, as bad as they are on Doug right now, like, we got to do something.
Well, I just remember the people on the other team coming up to me and apologizing.
The
They're
players.
Like, I'm sorry, man. They're like, I'm sorry. Like, the inmates were apologizing for the fan inmates.
But think about this. You guys can control the anger in certain situations, but you struggle to control it in others. So, that, again, that just goes back
from one league to another.
That's exactly right. Even though that goes back to the same issue again. I always like to say... Rob, when the Bible talks about that, it says, we usually use this phrase, that you make me so angry, but you can't make a person angry. They make themselves angry, perhaps based upon what you did. But the Bible always talks about anger in the middle voice in the Greek, which means it actually is something you do to yourself, not something that somebody else did to you. So again, anger works in an entirely different way in the scripture than the way it feels to us when it's happening.
Yeah, I was never angry. I wasn't angry at the third baseman who made the great catch. I always pointed it at myself.
That's interesting. Your anger was back at your own
competitiveness. It was always back at my own, because I always expected to do better. And for me, after that one particular incident, 2 months later is when I accepted Christ. Mm-hmm. So then and as we all know, it doesn't just happen like that. It's not like a light bulb or a switch. You turn it on, turn it off.
So let me ask you a real quick question. That issue where you flipped the cooler before you'd really come to know Christ, did you look back at that after it happened and say, man, I really overreacted over that?
That particular, maybe a couple days later or whatever.
Yeah.
But not like I look at it now.
Yeah, I understand.
Not like now I look back at it and go, oh, wow, that was just, that was way out of control.
Got it.
But is there a difference between... you doing that and that being just unsportsmanlike as opposed to being unchristian? Because you may not be a Christian, you may not have the standards or the belief that a Christian may, but we all still know that you shouldn't be flipping coolers.
Right. Yeah. Is it unsportsmanlike? Yeah, absolutely.
No, I mean, but it's not acceptable by any means. It's not acceptable if you're as a Christian just a player.
You don't have to... To do the right thing, we could say this about anything really in life. To do the right thing all of the time, it's just a matter of being that person and wanting to do the right things. So as I gradually changed my attitude, maybe 2 years later, my greatest accomplishment wasn't winning like the team triple crown or whatever it was. It was making it through an entire season without throwing a batting glove, a helmet, a bat, a glove, or saying any bad word. I took it upon myself to be like, okay, the field is now sacred. You don't say anything bad on the field. So that was my greatest accomplishment. But to this day, it's still a struggle. It's still a struggle. And when we played you guys on Friday night, and there was a situation in the game where it was the last inning and I come up and we have a chance to win the game, and then you do that crazy shift and the right fielder's out in the outfield and I hit the ball up in the air and I get mad.
Well,
it
might be a little
catch it.
Well, because I know it can get in your head. So I mean, that's easy.
Well, you know how to get in my head real easy.
Did
so
you throw
I'm
a cooler?
No, I didn't throw the cooler.
Do you know how many coolers I'm bringing in the next game?
but I was standing on first base. I didn't throw anything. I was mad. I was annoyed. I was irritated. But here's something else that comes into play too. Now, because Remy does not like me playing sports, she thinks it's a complete colossal waste of time, I feel whenever I go play that in order to deal with the repercussions of playing softball, it better be worth my time. So now if I hit a single, I'm not happy. If I go 4 for 4 with like 3 singles and a double, I'm like, Now I still gotta go home. I gotta go home and deal with an unhappy wife. I better be hitting bombs and justifying the unhappiness that I'm gonna get because now I gotta do extra work. And yeah, now I gotta put the girls to bed and give them the shower.
Which you
and do
should, by
else.
The way. Which
All
you
the
should,
time,
by the way.
Of course. So it's a little bit different. But I remember my first year on the Deacons, on the prison ministry team, and going into prisons, I still had, this is 4 years ago, I still had that I would get angry at myself for not doing what I wanted to do, but I would bottle it, I would control it, and a few times, you know, I'd flick the bat or I'd do something. And this was before I knew Doug, but one of the guys said to me, you're kind of like Doug Horton. Because you had played with them, and apparently you were very emotional too when you had played, and I was like, it's my kind of guy. So you tell
this
us.
This is a story you didn't tell me before.
Yeah,
right? You're saving this.
This is the
bomb you're dropping.
I'm not going to tell you who said that, but I was like, oh wow, okay, that's my kind of guy. So then as I got to know you and got to experience you playing sports and seeing you, I'm like, yeah, he's pretty competitive. He is like that.
But you know what changed? This is what I'm thinking of before you dropped that on me, because I wasn't expecting that coming. But what changes is when you're the coach. And, you know, I coach our team.
It does. Yeah, that's different.
And you are so consumed with yourself playing. But when you have to worry about getting this guy in, you're worried about that guy's feelings, you're worried about getting this guy enough playing time, you don't have time to think about yourself. Mm-hmm. And then you're also trying to think of what kind of team do we want to have? What kind of team do I want to lead?
Yeah.
And I need to lead by example. So you got to kind of bottle that up. And there's a couple things that, you know, my wife, Pastor Phil, you always say this, our wives are great mirrors for us, that they're a good reflection, and my wife is phenomenal. And as much as it hurts to hear, it's the truth, and she knows me better than absolutely anybody else. And I asked her if I could share this story, and I think she was really excited about it. But this was a defining moment. When I was in college, Chris and I started dating in the spring semester. She was a freshman, I was a senior, and we went to the conference championship, and we'd only been dating a couple months. And we played our last game, the conference championship, at Blue Rock Stadium in Delaware. It was a close game, and really, you realize, hey, we could win this game, we could go to the NCAA tournament, or my career may be over. So you kind of feel that's coming.
You didn't plan to play like in South Jersey's Tri-County or any of those leagues?
I played in that when I was in college, but not...
Not afterwards?
No.
You didn't want to hang on?
No, I was going to grad school. There was a lot of other things. We were
so you knew it. That was it. That was the end.
Yeah, for the most part.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I remember getting done, being disappointed, and... Now I think back, and it's not a matter of losing that game and being done, but what happened right after that and my actions. And what happened was Chris came to the game to support me, which was great, and her friends were standing right outside the tunnel as we came off the field. And I remember just being down and sad and just upset that, you know, playing baseball my entire life, it was over now. And I was giving into it. And I was like, I'm allowed to feel miserable. I'm allowed to feel this way because this is how you should feel. You know, and it was just like, I could be down. And I remember walking out and she was standing there with a bunch of her friends and she like smiled at me. And at that point I was thinking, I can't be happy. We just lost. Right. I can't be happy. How can I be happy to see her? Like that would be wrong.
Imagine being a Philadelphia athlete if they smile and the fans get mad at them. You can't be happy. You're smiling, you know?
Yeah.
Well, and you put that on yourself, and you're an unpaid professional. You're not a professional athlete.
No, I was a Division III baseball player, Rob. I mean, like, you know, and that's the other thing, too, is you have some perspective now when you're older. You're like, dude, you're a Division III baseball player, and nobody really cared anyway. But I remember looking at her, and I didn't want to talk, and I was upset, and I wanted to be angry.
See, there's the thing.
It was there.
It's absolutely you making yourself that way. Go ahead.
But I turned around, and I walked back onto the field, into the dugout. And I was like, I'm not ready to go out there yet. And it hurt her. Mm. And she's like, you know, it was the game. And she played. And she's a great athlete. She had a great high school career. She played in college. She played lacrosse and basketball. So she understands being an athlete.
At least she understood that part, yeah.
Well, she did. But she was like, you know, you couldn't come see me. You know, you couldn't. You got that upset about it.
You still married her.
And she did. I'm telling you, she is amazing.
Yeah.
But... You know, Chris, I am so sorry. So sorry for that. I am so sorry. I apologize.
How many years later is this? The statute
that was
of limitations.
That was 1999.
Statute of limitations on that apology has expired, and you can only make up for them with flowers.
You know, but I always just think, too, when Eagles lost, I was like, I need to be angry until Thursday because they lost on Sunday. Like, I would have
stop
this righteous anger.
How long?
I didn't tell you about that.
When did that stop?
A couple years ago. But no, it was no.
Up
when
until
you start,
a couple
no,
years
no,
ago,
it was. It was.
A you're a family man, and you're concerned about it. Well, I'm not even going to get into that.
No, it was many years ago.
Go back to the story though, real quickly, Doug. Because here's what I noticed in the story.
That.
That's okay. I'm taking you back there. So here's the thing with the story. What we forget is our anger always affects other people. I mean, in your situation, Rob, it affected the coach's girlfriend when you flipped the cooler and almost hit her, right? That's not even as significant as those who are closest to us, those who are closer to us than the coach's girlfriend.
Or like the kids watching.
Yeah, yeah, those.
Let me be transparent,
All are
Phil.
Affected, but the point being is this, real quick, Doug, is that because you're closer to Chris as a girlfriend, as her boyfriend, and then one day as her husband, there's a greater propensity for it to hurt the person when the anger is revealed than when the anger is just revealed in general.
Well, I thought she would be more impressed with me playing on that field.
Ah, that's
right.
Yeah,
like,
yeah,
and that's supposed to be the bit. Look at me. I'm playing baseball on this beautiful field in this stadium, and like that's you should like me for that. And and I'm so thankful
Why
that my wife.
Why are you laughing, Rob? That's how you played it one time too, right?
Yeah, well, I'm really glad that my wife's not that superficial, right? I mean, yeah. So she cared more about how I treated her than with anything that I did, and I think we all know that. You know, our wives would.
Yeah, absolutely.
I didn't play to impress people. I play like I held my own standards.
You impress yourself all the time, Rob. let's be serious.
It was like I for my own standards. So like, if someone's telling me, "Oh, you did great," but I feel like I didn't. All I cared about were my standards. So, you know, everyone could be telling you you're great or you're good or you whatever, but you expect to be that much better or that much more elite. So it's your own. It's your own. Like you were saying. You control your own anger.
Mm-hmm. I think there's also another factor that should be considered. Anytime you do something, let's just call the sport a craft, because it has to be shaped. You've practiced it. You've worked the fundamentals. You've watched people who do it well. You're always trying to be better at it. I think there is something in that, Rob, that is a natural competitiveness that can be God-given. I mean, when God created the heavens and the earth, he looked and said it was good. And so when we do something, it's not unusual for us to say, "Hey, I want to do that better." In other words, it's just the very nature that we have because we're made in the image of God.
But I think that's why sometimes people get really upset, because we feel that and we talked about this in previous shows, that our identity is found in our success. Mm-hmm. And whether an umpire makes a bad call, or a play doesn't go our way, or a teammate fails, or we fail and we let down the team when you could have won the game at the end, at the end, it's all a matter of perspective. And most people say, "Hey, you know what? Just play the game the right way and have character playing the game, not whether you win or lose."
But I think there is still, I think the very nature of the game, its success is evaluated on whether someone won or lost, right? I mean,
true,
the success
true.
Of the teams are evaluated on whoever makes the playoffs.
So you don't diminish the fact that that counts.
I don't think you want to diminish that. I think, but it isn't wrong. It is, but I do think you still have to ask a question about that what I would call the primary motive, not the secondary motive. We want to play the game to win. That's a secondary motive. But as a Christian, you want to play the game for the glory of God. That's the primary motive. So I think it often comes back to the why for what we're really doing, and therefore why the anger shows up.
For me now, I look at it as try to be a representation of Christ. Mm-hmm. And I don't know who came up with this saying, but I use it all the time, and I like it, and I'm not going to take credit for it. It's not my saying, and I'm sure you guys have heard it before, but it's live your life in such a way that those who know you but don't know Christ will come to know Christ because they know you. Mm-hmm. So when I'm playing in a non-Christian league, and there's three of those that I'm in versus the other one that I'm in, I go above and beyond to make sure that I'm representing myself in the right way, and trying to be that. I'll have Bible verses on my batting gloves, just in case somebody asks me what it is. And I don't throw water. And now I don't throw anything.
Yeah.
Occasional flick of the bat. But if you try and live your life that way, if you call yourself a Christian and you're trying to walk your talk, well, then you would try and take it into whatever craft, as you were saying, whether you're playing ball on the weekend as a weekend warrior, or whether it is in the marketplace, wherever you are at work and something doesn't go right and this comes in this way, or the bills are looking that way, or you're an accountant and you don't like this, whatever you're doing, try and live your life in such a way where people who know you but don't know Christ will come to know Christ because they know you.
I think that's great. I think, too, I think we should play at the highest level. Rob, when someone says, well, it's not about winning or losing, it's just about having fun. For guys who are competitive, having fun is playing well. You don't have fun when nobody's playing well. You feel like it's a waste of your time, right? So I think that's just this idea that whatever we do all to the glory of God. So we should play well, and we should play competitively.
When we come back, we're going to hear from Curtis Granderson, and he's a guy, as we said earlier in the show, who really does take his role, being a role model, seriously, and we'll hear him discuss how he handles having failure on the field, especially this season when he's had so many struggles and he's batting 159. You're listening to Faith on the Field show presented by Eastern University on 610 Sports, ESPN Radio.
Ranked one of the most beautiful Christian colleges in the world by Christian Universities Online, Eastern University is the place where you can advance your career with an empowering education. With several locations in the Philadelphia area and online classes, Eastern offers undergraduate, master's, and doctoral programs in business, education, counseling, and psychology, healthcare, ministry, and many other areas. Learn more by visiting eastern.edu. Brought to you by the Department of Kinesiology and the College of Health and Social Sciences at Eastern University.
What does Boggs Auto believe? Boggs Auto believes that after an accident, your vehicle can and will be like it was before the accident. Boggs Auto believes and knows for certain that when you have an accident, it is your choice who you take the vehicle to. Boggs Auto believes that giving back to the community makes us all stronger. And each year, they donate a vehicle to a family or organization that is without transportation. Boggs Auto believes that God is in control. Check them out at BoggsAuto.com.
Hey, we get it. You're facing a lot of pressure. You gotta make money. You gotta have a life. You're running your kids everywhere, and you have to keep it all together. Easier said than done, right? Well, not necessarily. We're not experts. We just understand the pressures people face, and our resources are here to help. Contact Biblical Strategies for help that can begin to make a real difference. Just go to biblicalstrategies.com. Biblicalstrategies.com.
Hey, this is Curtis Granderson of the New York Mets. You're listening to Faith on the Field on 610 Sports ESPN Radio.
And welcome back to Faith on the Field show presented by Eastern University, 610 Sports ESPN Radio. I'm Rob Motti with Doug Horton, Pastor Phil Moser, and Phillies chaplain, Pastor Rob Pinckney. About a month ago, I had an opportunity to sit down with Curtis Granderson, three-time All-Star, former Tiger, former Yankee, now currently with the New York Mets. And this is our conversation with Curtis Granderson. Curtis, great to have you on Faith on the Field show. Tell us a little bit about how you came to know Christ.
It's been in my family. Yeah, my mother and grandparents were Christians, and I was baptized, I think, around 10 or 11, 12 years old. I had my grandmother's church in Chicago, and my grandmother still goes to church on Sunday and multiple times throughout the course of the week. And as my mom has had more time, she's become more and more involved in the church, and it's been something that's been around, and baseball chapel's been something to help us out a lot because of us being on the road so much and being able to still get the word and knowledge and learn as we go has been great. And even daily devotionals, whether it be via email or actual hard copy, has been something that's definitely helped me to continue to keep the faith and try to pass it on to others.
You are now in your eighth season in New York, which is probably the biggest, toughest media market in the country. How does your faith help you deal with criticism, expectations from fans and from media?
I think the biggest thing is just trusting what God has laid out for you and realizing that everything has a path and a plan, and only He knows it, and will unveil that to you when your time is ready. So regardless of what has been said or may be said or what is thought about you, I've always put it back on them. If they want to say something negative about that's something that they have to deal with. I know the things that are around me, you know, family, faith, friends, and where we come from. You're not always going to be able to touch those around you, but if you can always just be that light that God wants you to be towards them, that's what He is asking you to do. That it's up to them to go ahead and hopefully take that upon themselves. You can put it out there. Hopefully they'll be receptive to it.
In 2013, your final year with the Yankees, you're going into your free agent season. You had a couple freak injuries. You only play 61 games. A lot of guys in that situation may be like, oh, come on, God, why me? Maybe you have some bitterness. How were you able to handle that, and what were your feelings during that time?
I think the biggest thing, and actually it happened in, I think, our last chapel, which was our opening day chapel of this 2017 season. It was the thing that we always remember, either the bad moments and asking God to get us out of them, but we are less likely to comment and communicate about all the good things that have happened. So yes, I had two injuries that kept me from playing, and potentially a bigger payday than what I ended up getting. But let's go back. I got a payday. I still got to play. My health was good. My arms didn't fall off. They were going to heal up. I was back there playing again. So there was a lot of bright sides, and just think how long I'd got a chance to play that God gave me the opportunity to do so. So, yeah, we had a couple bumps and bruises here and there, but God still kept me moving and kept me moving forward, and I'm still standing here today.
On the show tonight, we're talking about Christian athletes setting an example by the way they play, by the way they conduct themselves on the field. You're a guy who's truly an example of someone who can always keep it together. It's an emotional game. It's a competitive game. We don't see you throwing your bat. We don't see you throwing your helmet. How are you able to just handle tough situations and slumps and failure? Because baseball is a game of failure.
I've always been a person that my equipment has never been the reason why I failed or succeeded. And plus, I don't want to damage my equipment, because then I won't be able to go out there and use it again. So I always try to tell kids that. And big message is, again, people are watching you, whether it's people that are wanting to be influenced by you or people that aren't influenced by you. So how would God want you to be in those situations? And I always try to put a smile on my face as best I can. And a lot of the times, I say more than 90% of the time, it's always genuine and true. If it is down, I'm either sick or tired or something that happens to be, but there's never anything too upsetting. Think of how many games we've lost over the course of my career from T-ball to now. You're going to lose games. I've lost games. I've lost big games. There's no reason to get upset about it and have that affect everything else outside of the family. So I think one thing that I've prided myself on is when I see friends and family afterwards, they go, man, whether you win or lose, you always look the same way. And I go, I gotta be. And that's the way God wants me to be. There's no reason for me to take this out on you guys. You and I are about to go have dinner tonight. Let's enjoy having dinner. The game is done with. It's over. It's time to turn the page and move on to the next thing.
Proverbs 22:6, and I want to read this to you. It says, start children off on the way they should go, and even when they are old, they will not turn from it. And you do a great job of this through your Grandkids Foundation. Tell us about the focus of that and how you're helping children.
The foundation started in 2007. It's been really cool because this is our 10th year. Established when I was with the Detroit Tigers. The high school graduation rate in that city at that time was at 50%. So education being very important to my mom and dad, being recently retired educators, my sister currently teaching at the university level, and me being a handful of players with a college degree, realized the importance of education. So for whatever reason, it was missing, and kids weren't turning their attention to the importance of education and what doors it could potentially open for you. So we just tried to go ahead and bring that message back. Whether it's us trying to talk to little kids, or parents talking to little kids, or teachers talking to little kids, if you continue to keep saying the same things over and over again, eventually they'll start to set in with people. And now it's 10 years, and we've been able to impact a lot of different kids all over the United States, from Detroit to Chicago to New York to Florida and a bunch of places in between. And that's been our goal, just trying to give them positive messages, positive images, letting them know that you may not think people care about you, but there is always someone in your corner, whether it be a family member, maybe it's someone you're meeting for the first time. And that's what we've tried our best to do with the Grandkids Foundation.
Curtis, we appreciate your time, man. We wish you tons of blessings along the way.
Thank you very much. Thanks for having me.
And interestingly, when I asked Curtis about his attitude on the field and how he always avoids throwing things and showing frustration, and it was a great response where he goes, well, I try not to take it out on my equipment because I want to use it again.
I like that one.
You know, and then he says, hey, well, and you do, and you do get fined in Major League Baseball too for throwing your equipment,
but it's not the equipment's fault either.
Absolutely.
Like, there you go.
And he also says, people are always watching you. How would God want you to act in those situations? So that's what it's all about, really, is you have to be cognizant of you're angry at yourself for failing to do whatever it is you expected of yourself in that situation, whether it's on a baseball field, football field, lacrosse, basketball, wherever you are. But you have to be cognizant of who's watching you, and kids are watching. And in the cases of Major League Baseball players and professional athletes, so many people are watching them. And you remember last year in a game in the NBA Finals when Steph Curry threw his mouth guard.
Yeah.
Steph Curry threw his mouth guard and hit somebody in the stands during that game. Yeah. And, you know, Steph Curry is one of the more outspoken Christians. So people look at him and go, well, how do you do that? That competitive spirit, and you got to just be able to rein yourself in.
I was just going to come back to this passage in 1 Timothy 4 where it says that we should set an example to the believers in speech and conduct and love and faith and purity. In other words, it's just not the action that is the example, but there's other ways that we're an example in that as well.
Yeah. When we come back, we'll have Pastor Rob join us, and we'll do our cross-training segment, and we'll hear how he handles this with different professional athletes and guys who are tossing helmets and everything else in the Major League Baseball. You're listening to Faith on the Field show, presented by Eastern University on 610 Sports, ESPN Radio. Hey guys, it's Rob Motti. I want to tell you about a can't-miss event that's coming up in a few months. I did it last fall. It's called Goliathon, and it's a Ninja Warrior-type obstacle run that's tiered for all skill levels, which means you can run the event as a family or as a group of friends, even if you're at different fitness levels. The course is about 4 miles long with 12 tiered obstacles that are unique, challenging, and a load of fun. And the best part is all proceeds fund clean water projects in developing countries. The next event is in Malka Hill, New Jersey on June 3rd. Entry price increases are coming soon, so sign up today. Go to goliathon.com for details.
Guys hate to admit it, but sometimes things can start to feel a little out of control. We procrastinate, we battle with anger, and we start to worry about our finances. But we're here to help. At Biblical Strategies, we've spent over 20 years helping people begin to think about life with the help that God offers. Contact us for resources that can begin to help you today. Go to biblicalstrategies.com. Biblicalstrategies.com.
And welcome back to Faith on the Field show presented by Eastern University, 610 Sports, ESPN Radio. Rob Motti with Doug Horton, Pastor Phil Moser, and Pastor Rob Pinckney, the Phillies chaplain, will be joining us in a few seconds. And guys, you heard me talk about needing a new fence around my house because the old wooden fence was falling apart and did not meet my wife's specifications. And Remy is very picky. She's very particular. So I couldn't hire just anyone for the job. I had to make the right choice, and that's why I went to Berger Fence Company in Sewell, New Jersey. They are South Jersey's oldest and most respected name in fence. Their crew came over a few weeks ago. They installed a beautiful almond-colored vinyl fence with solar caps on all the posts going all around. It lights up the neighborhood. It looks incredible. Remy loves it, and if she's happy, I'm happy. So thank you to Berger Fence Company. And if you're looking for a fence, they can handle all your fencing needs. They will also customize the fence as needed in their fabrication shop right there on Main Street in Sewell, New Jersey. Only their qualified employees install your fence. They do not use subcontractors. So call Ed Smith today, 856-468-2300, and schedule an appointment. Don't forget to ask Ed. You get a free gate when you purchase 100 feet or more of any fence. That's 856-468-2300. Ask for Ed Smith or check them out at burgerfence.com. Berger Fence Company has served more than 48,000 satisfied customers over the past 63 years in the tri-state area. You could be their next happy customer. And I am happy to turn it over to Doug, who's talking about Goliathon.
Yeah, Rob, you know, I'm waiting for your pool to get open so we can go out and enjoy the fence.
I need a landscaper to do some work first.
And, you know, last year we talked a little bit about your fear of water.
Yes.
And how you didn't want to...
3-4 feet, I'm good.
But no swimming.
No, I stand right there. As long as I could stand in it, I'm happy.
Well, that was your biggest question about Goliathon.
Yeah.
Because you did it last year.
It was great, and I would do it this year, but I got a party.
That's all right. So our next event is coming up June 3rd. So what I want to do is just let everybody know real quick, Goliathon is an obstacle course event that's found in South Jersey. This will be our 7th event that we've had over the past 4 years, and all the money that we raise through entry fees and sponsorships go to clean water projects in third world countries. So this event that we're going to have, all the money is going to go to water projects in Malawi. And so I just want to let everybody know, you know, registration is going to end in about a week and a half. So if you can go to goliathon.com, it's a great way to register. But some people might say, hey, you know what? The price is too high because we're real close to the event. and I'm not
it's never
right.
too
I'm
high
not,
for
I'm
charity.
You know, some it might be people didn't budget,
budget
it right
or whatever.
Way. We didn't budget.
Okay.
And so, or some people might say, "Hey, I'm not ready to do it."
Okay.
They haven't been training. But our next event's going to be October 21st, so registration will open for that. It'll be cheaper. But what I want to throw out there to all our listeners is that you can really help us out. We're looking for volunteers. And so you can be there for a half a day. You could be there for a full day. But we would really like people to come out. You can experience the event, see what it's like, but really contribute because every volunteer makes the event special and really will help our mission to bring clean water to third world countries. So if you at all want to volunteer, please email info@goliathon.com. That's info@goliathon.com. That's Phil McFarland's email, and he's our volunteer coordinator. So if anybody's listening, has some time on Saturday, June 3rd, we would love to have you come on out and give us a hand.
That'd be a great time.
It's a great opportunity, too, on the volunteer side, just to say, Doug, that they can just come and shout encouragement as well as doing something.
Oh, absolutely.
They can shout encouragement to the folks who are running through it. I mean, that's just...
Yeah, check out the website, goliathon.com. Yeah. But email info@goliathon.com if you can spend a couple hours.
It is time now, guys, for our cross-training segment, which is powered by Boggs Auto Collision Rebuilders in Woodbury, New Jersey. And we are so thrilled to have Philly's chaplain, Pastor Robert Pinkney, on the show. And Pastor Rob, great to have you here.
Great to be here.
I want to start off with Curtis Granderson talking about the importance of Baseball Chapel and how it allows him to stay in the Word, and not just Curtis himself, but other players, obviously, around the league, especially when the team is on the road and they're able to get involved in Baseball Chapel and get their Sunday Word there. And he also talked about getting some email to them and literature like that. So tell us a little bit about how you became the Phillies chaplain, how long it's been, and what that process is like.
Well, every time I tell this story, I laugh myself how I got hooked up with Baseball Chapel. I was actually doing some work with the Phillies chaplain. He's a pastor at Roxborough Community Baptist Church. And I was doing some janitorial and some maintenance work at his church. And it's funny how me and him just got connected. And one day he asked me, out of the clear blue sky, he said, why don't you come on down to the stadium with me? And I'm like, oh, you want me to come down there? And he was like, yeah, I just want you to come down. And I went to a chapel service with him. I walk into the locker room and I see Jimmy Rollins and Chase Utley and Cole Hamels. And it's like totally blew my mind. I'm like, wow, these guys are on my son's wall. And now I'm face to face with them.
How about that?
Now, were you a huge baseball fan?
I'm a huge baseball fan. One of my sons played college baseball. He was a college pitcher at Lincoln University.
Okay.
College pitcher for all years in college, 4 years in college.
How about that?
Yeah.
So what year was that this happened?
That was going on almost 5 years ago that I met up with him, and I was substituting for him, doing some substitute work for him. And then the next year, he called and asked me, he called me into his office, and he asked me, he said, I'd like you to be the chaplain. I'm about to retire after 17 years.
Wow.
Blew my mind.
How about that? And now your responsibility is the Phillies. But as I've been down there with you, is you do on a particular Sunday when they're home, you do a little service for the Phillies, the visiting team, the umpires, and all the stadium employees.
Stadium employees. We have four services on Sunday. And after that fourth one, I'm drained. Yeah. But it's a good thing, though. You know, I set it up with the employees, the stadium employees, and Phillies employees. And God is blessed. We have about 25 to 30 people come in sometimes. Then I set it up with the Phillies and I go across to the other clubhouse. They don't want them all together, you know, but I set it up with the visiting team. And after I'm finished with the visiting team, I set it up with the umpires and we have church.
That's awesome. That's awesome. Yes. So we've been talking tonight about competitive nature, controlling our emotions on the field, setting the right example for everyone watching us, whether we're playing softball like Doug and I do, or whether we're playing in the majors, you know, in front of millions of people watching. Do you ever talk to players, whether it's in chapel, whether it's on the side, whether it's in Bible study, if they're having a tough time dealing with failure, and perhaps you may see them throw equipment or drop some foul language here or there? And has that happened? And how do you handle that? What's your advice for them and for all of us?
Well, let me touch on the players dealing with failure. In this life, we're going to have some ups and downs. But the thing about it, as a Christian, we must remain consistent. Being a consistent Christian, it produces a powerful testimony to God's love
and his compassion and his grace towards us. Mm-hmm. I always let them know about what Paul says in Ephesians 4:1. He says to live your life worthy of the calling that was called for you, so that Christ may be glorified. Christ is an unchangeable. We serve an unchangeable God. Mm-hmm. He's the same God when we're in the mountain. He's the same God when we're in the valley. There's going to be some ups and downs in your life, but the main goal is to remain consistent and let your light shine. Jesus told us to let our light so shine before men so they can see the works in you, so they can glorify the Father. Mm-hmm. And that's what I try to stress to them and let them know that, listen, man, I've been through failure too. We all been through failures, but Christ doesn't change. He's still the same yesterday, today, and forevermore.
That's great. One of the questions I had for you, Pastor Rob, is Doug mentioned, you know, this idea that his anger, his frustration touched even his girlfriend at the end of the tunnel. So sometimes that anger affects those other relationships. So walk us through your counsel or your advice when we are angry and that anger is affecting somebody else. What's the counsel to them?
Well, one thing I must share this. I shared this story a couple of times before. It was a player. We all know Ryan Howard. Mm-hmm. Ryan Howard went through a very, very bad situation last year, his last year of the contract, his last year playing with Philadelphia. And he came to me and he had this look on his face. It was the incident that someone threw a bottle at him. And he said, Rob, I messed up. You know, I got mad. I said some words that I wasn't supposed to say. And he's like, and I said, well, listen, man, we all get angry at sometimes. But the Bible says that we all get angry, but don't allow that anger to cause you to sin. Mm-hmm. You know, don't let the sun go down on your wrath. He felt like he did something real terribly wrong. And I was like, Ryan, listen, you know, when stuff like that happens in your life, you just ask Christ to forgive you and just move on. Mm-hmm. Don't beat yourself up over the situation, because we all have sinned and fall short of the glory of God, but we can't dwell on those sins, because sin brings about other things, and we can't let the sin settle in our hearts, you know, because then it becomes resentment and then it becomes depression. Mm-hmm. So we just got to pick up the pieces, and if God has forgiven you, you know, you can move on from that.
That's a really good reminder, I think, too, Rob, because it's just pointing out the fact that if we continue in that anger, it creates additional angers like bitterness and our temper flares. The more we dwell upon it, we have to come back to God's way of forgiveness to work back through it again. I think that's a cool story, because it shows that though there was that moment, there was also immediately his heart pricks him, right? Like, mm-hmm. I should not have done that. Well, what do I do to make that right?
It's funny that that's the moment where Ryan finally let something, that it took that, because he was getting a lot of, for all that he did in this city, I think a lot of people, after his injury, and he was not playing to the level that he was playing before he got injured, and he wasn't earning that contract 5 years, and people held that against him. Mm-hmm. And he would hear the boos that Chase wouldn't hear. Mm-hmm. You know, he would get the wrath because he was the last man standing out of that Chase, mm-hmm. Jimmy, and Cole getting mm-hmm. traded to Texas. So he was the last one here. Even Chooch got traded before he did. And for that to finally be the breaking point, but then immediately right afterwards, it's pretty interesting.
Yes, and the thing is, Rob, you seen the hurt on his face. As soon as I came into the locker room, he had that look on his face, and the hurt was there. I even felt for him, too. And to piggyback on what you said, yeah, he did go through a lot of abuse, but he said he'd been through a lot, but he was that one thing that just ticked him off when the bottle. He said, I could take the booze.
Yeah.
I could take them talking about me. But when they throw the bottle at you,
that's just,
you
know, awful.
Yeah, that's, you know, kind of bad.
I'm just amazed, though, at, in spite of all the other things, the thing that pricks his heart is the fact that he lost his temper.
Yes.
Right? The fact that he let the stuff happen, that he said some things he wished he could have gotten back. Mm-hmm. And I think, again, that's just a great reminder of how anger is affecting all the other people around us. But if all of us were that sensitive to our anger, Rob, as opposed to the fact that our game was off a little bit, it'd be a lot better world, quite frankly.
Well, yeah. Thank God that was the old Rob.
Well, you got to see me now after a bad show. I'm throwing computer. No, no, that never happened.
I was actually standing here in shock, because I said I never seen that side of Rob. I always see this pleasant smile.
I'm telling you, that was 2010. Yeah. That was 2010. Okay. So we're going back a while. So, Pastor Phil, you had another one?
Yeah, I just, when the professional athlete begins to experience some degree of failure? Is there a biblical passage or an encouragement? And we talked about this earlier over lunch. You were telling the story. Go ahead and tell that story again, Rob.
Yes, I actually used my own personal experience to speak to the players. I was blessed one time to speak at a men's basketball fellowship at Valley Forge Baptist Church. And it was a bunch of men. And I asked God to give me something to say to the guys. And God told me to be transparent so that he can transform.
You got to say that again. This is what Rob always says to me. He says, okay, you got to say that a second time. So go ahead. Just give that to us again.
To be transparent so God can transform. Mm-hmm. And that was something I was like, wow, God. So God was ministering to me. And I was like, Lord, well, you know, give me the words to say to the guys. And he said, well, if my life was a movie, my life would be called The Good, The Bad, and The Ugly. And I was letting the guys know, you guys see the good side of Rob, where I'm the baseball chaplain, I'm a father, I'm a husband, I'm a minister, I'm a youth advocate, but they don't see the bad, they didn't see the bad side of Rob, because there was a bad side of Rob at one time. I wasn't always a good husband. I wasn't always a good father. I wasn't always a witness for Christ. And that was the bad side of me. But yet through it all, through the good, bad, and the ugly, Christ still showed his mercy and his grace upon me that I can witness to someone else. See, we are all overcome by our own, by someone else's testimony. Some things that you're going through in your life, it's not just for you, but it's just for someone else, so they can help, that you can help them overcome their situation in their trials and their tribulations. And one thing that we got to understand, that God said it in his word, that he said all things work together for the good for them that love me.
Romans 8:28.
That's my favorite.
One of the Hall of Fame Bible verses.
That's a great one right there. And I look back over my life and I sit back and I say, man, all the stuff that I went through, it was for a purpose. God has a purpose. Even before the foundation of the world, God had this purpose in my life at this time, at that moment, for me to go through. I didn't like it at first when I was going through. But now that I see that I could be a witnessing tool to help someone else. The struggles along their way. See, a lot of us don't like to get transparent, but sometimes God will allow you to be transparent to help somebody else. And that's what happened with me.
You know, that's interesting, because when I work with some youth kids, like both my daughters play sports and coach in basketball, you know, lacrosse, coach soccer in the past. And we were talking about this before the show, and it's interesting what you're trying to instill in these young kids regarding sportsmanship, how you'd coach them if they come off the court or the field, and saying it's okay, and trying to encourage them to be good teammates, good sportsmanship. But it's interesting that if they saw us play, if they came to one of our softball games, Rob.
Well, one of the old games. Yeah. I'm not going to say now. 2010 now, Doug. We're not talking 2017 games.
Absolutely. But it's interesting.
When you say hustle and you don't hustle, okay. I never say
You're not going to make me tell that.
I never say
hustle.
We're not going to go.
But I just think it's interesting what we try to instill. And I saw a commercial last night watching the basketball games for the NBA junior program, where they're trying to get young kids to come out and teach them teamwork, commitment, and sportsmanship. What we expect from our youth compared to what do we expect from our professionals? And is there a double standard there? Mm-hmm. One thing I always appreciate about Phil is that he always says, I have to preach past the front row. Mm-hmm. And in the front row is his family. Mm-hmm. And they see you when you have those moments of anger and you're struggling and you don't handle situations the right way. It's easy to get up there and tell other people how they should act. But, you know, my dad always said this, and this is one of those things that, you know, we're going through life and he said it over and over over again, and I tend to use it now. It's, your actions speak so loud I can't hear what you're saying.
Ooh, that's a good one.
I hated that. I hated it. But my dad would always say that, and I tend to say that to my college students now. Your actions speak so loud I can't hear what you're saying.
So your question, Doug, has to do with, is there an inconsistency if we play one way and yet we're telling these younger kids that they need to play another way?
I think there is an inconsistency of what we expect from our professional.
Well, I think the Bible actually addresses that. I mean, it's not a word we like to say, but the Bible refers to that as hypocrisy, right? That I am telling you to do one thing, but I'm doing something else entirely. And the sad thing about that is it invalidates the message. Now the person who wants to talk about the Lord has invalidated the message because of how they've lived. They've drawn a distinction between the fact that they can do something that the younger generation can't. Mm. So
let me interject on that real quick. And see, the thing about it is, we got to let our light so shine before men. And we may be the only Bible that people may ever read.
Yeah.
And that's what I always try to, you know, let the players know, that your actions. Let the children, the fans, and the people that see you, you may be the only Bible that people will ever read. And that's the thing that we got to preach and teach to our children and to the, our family.
Well, I think it's missing some pages in most of our lives, frankly. You know? So it's not an easy read.
Well, the worst thing you'd ever want somebody to say is, well, what's so great about being a Christian? You're no different than I am.
I agree. That's again, the standard should be different.
What do you say, Pastor Rob, to players to use that platform that they have? Because they have an incredible platform, bigger than you or I will ever have. They have that platform, and whether it's talking about their faith on social media, whether it's walking their talk just in interviews, what do you say to them to maybe kind of encourage them to not keep it in? Because, you know, we live in a world now where it's not always the cool thing to do. Or when you see guys talking about their faith, a lot of times the reporters will shut off their microphones and walk away. So what do you say to them?
I always encourage the players to take advantage of that big stage that God has allowed them to be on. Let people know that it's only by the grace of God that you are here. It's nothing that we have done. It's nothing that we have done on our own. Jesus made it plain and simple. He said that without me, you can do nothing. So we got to let our light shine wherever we are, whether you at Citizens Bank Park or whether you in single A baseball or you Division III baseball, the same guy.
Or church softball.
Or church
softball.
That's
the big time right now.
Hey, listen, he's the same guy, man. And now that these players, I always encourage them. I know you guys had Jim R. Gomez and Eichhoff on the show. And those are my two main core guys where they're eager to do things for Christ, to let their light shine. The platform that they were given, because they know that if it wasn't for God, they would not be there. And I always try to encourage the players to allow them to let their light shine before men.
Amen. That was our cross-training segment powered by Boggs Auto Collision Rebuilders. We want to thank you, Pastor Robert Pinckney, Phillies team chaplain, for joining us. Doug, we want to tell everybody, in case they missed any of our previous episodes, we've had Mike Schmidt on, Daniel Nava, as Pastor Rob said, Jenmar Gomez, Jared Eichhoff. We had on
Justin Forsett,
Deshaun Watson, Solomon Thomas. Tonight we had Curtis Granderson on. So they can find our shows. They can download our Faith on the Field podcast on iTunes, and they can also follow us
on Facebook, on Faith on the Field, Twitter, Faith on the Field. And you could always go back and look at our live episodes. I know a lot of people are enjoying that on Facebook. They could always watch it. But again, the iTunes is great. And if you ever want to tune in, I actually did this the other day at work, going to iHeartRadio, and you can do that from your computer or from your phone, and also the TuneIn Radio app.
And listen to it live.
Yeah, but you know what? We're in the 5 o'clock hour, 5 to 6. We're going to stay there for hopefully a long time.
At least for the remainder of the summer.
I hope so.
And then we'll see what happens.
6:10 a.m. So
we want to thank everybody. We want to thank our sponsors, Eastern University, Boggs Auto Collision Rebuilders. I want to thank Pastor Scott Foreman for all his work on all of our technology, Jewel Bug Photography for making us look good, our wives, of course, as always, Ryan Lennox back there for producing the show, Elevation Worship Church for the intro song. I am Rob Motti, reminding you, make a difference. Be a blessing.